up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Massive Breakdown Podcast, episode 78, where we'll be talking to you tonight about all things Warmind. We've had a nice couple little content drops in preparation for the actual Warmind DLC drop in May 8th. So we've had some narrative previews given to us, which we're going to talk to you about. Super excited about that stuff. And then we also have a little Warmind hub that's gone up on Bungie.net. And we're going to be breaking down some of the things that are on that for you. So this is going to be the last podcast before the Warmind DLC drops, and that's all we're going to be focusing on tonight. But let's get the introduction out of the way first. As always, my name is Mercules, and I'm joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing tonight, Kit?
Merc, doing phenomenal. Still living in total chaos right now, as I'm sure people have heard me talking about on social media and in the Discord, but always happy to take a break from that chaos and focus on Destiny for a bit. So happy to be here. How about you, man?
I'm doing pretty excellent, pretty excellent. You know, just living life, enjoying the fact that 6v6 Iron Banner's back, which is by far my favorite game type that has ever been in Destiny 2. So I'm really loving that fact, and honestly, I'm getting some pretty good game plan in. You know, obviously we took a little bit of a break for a period of time there, but I've been playing a lot of Destiny 2 recently. Since I took a break, I've obviously tanked my KD on my Hunter, which I say meticulously worked all the way up to 2.0, and I'm down at like 1.93 now, so I'm trying to slowly claw my way back up to that 2.0, but I'm just enjoying it for the first time in a little bit. It sucks that I don't have anything to actually do in the game, but I think that's all about to change in about a week.
First world problems, man.
Exactly. Now, I will not be taking work off for this release, which is going to be the first time in Destiny history I've not taken work off for one of the content drops.
Yeah, I also will definitely be at work, but as of next week, I will be working from home. So I plan to spend my lunch break for sure logging in and checking out something. I don't know if I'm going to jump into private matches right away and start playing around with the exotics, or if I'm going to try to fit a little story in on lunch, but definitely one of those things is going to happen. I'll probably throw it up on Twitch too, see if anyone is around, wants to hang out, catch a preview. If I do that, I'll stay to the Crucible so that I don't spoil story for anybody.
All right, well, let's talk about what we're going to be getting in Warmind, at least what we know so far. So we know that it launches on May 8th, and at the same time, Season 3 is going to begin. So they're saying Golden Age satellites slam into the surface of the Hellas Basin on Mars, icy glaciers thaw, revealing the core of the Warmind Rasputin, and an ancient Hive army bent on its destruction. So we know that we're going to be getting a story mission, story missions, I hope there's more than one, that are focused at least on Rasputin. We did see the Warmind prologue cinematic. We're going to be working with Anna Bray. She's going to be the vendor for the location, the Hellas Basin, on Mars. And we saw something interesting when we were looking over the prologue cinematic again tonight. There's a shadow that moves across the ice towards Anna Bray, and it looks to me like a worm with like fangs or a crown or something pointy on top of its head.
Horns, maybe?
It didn't look like Rasputin, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's right there. You can see this yourself if you're hopping onto that Warmind hub at home while you listen. It's at 133 that you get the best view, but I think you can start seeing it right at about 130, 131 into that video. I'd recommend hitting the little gear icon on the bottom right on YouTube and slowing it down to 0.25. You can just watch it kind of peak up those cliffs. So it could be a ship, could be, who knows?
I don't think it was a ship because it made like a weird growling noise if you're listening to the background.
Okay.
It's like a weird growling noise, and it starts to like, there what looks to be like a shadow starts to, or like darkness starts to move over the ice, like the actual darkness itself, like black tendrils start to go over the ice that she's standing on. So it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat. And obviously, thanks to the narrative previews that we were given and that we're going to get into in a little bit once we finish talking about the content, we know that one of the worm gods may in fact be our enemy during perhaps the story missions, perhaps the raid. We don't quite know yet. But in addition to what we assume are story missions dealing with Rasputin, we're also getting the escalation protocol. We don't need to talk too much about that because we spent a lot of time talking about it in the last podcast. We're getting a new raid lair called the Spire of Stars. And we all know that there's that giant horn on the top of the Leviathan sitting up there. with the little binary suns that are, or binary lights or whatever they are that seem to be, you know, rotating around it. So I'm assuming that the new raid is going to take place in that spire. And I'm hoping that the raid boss is one of the worm gods. However, I have a feeling it may in fact be Kallus himself, since this is supposed to be the third, and I don't know if it's the final, but at least we know for a fact that the raid that's coming out in September is not taking place on the Leviathan. It is an actual independent, you know, standalone raid. So I think this may be the final raid layer for the Leviathan.
Well, that's you know, that's kind of exciting to see see them take it to a completely different location in the future. It's exciting to know that, but it's also exciting, I guess, to see the conclusion of a sort of a raid storyline. Hopefully, my main concern here with all of this is that they don't, like, so you might, you know, you might remember the old Spider-Man movies that came out with what's his bucket? Toby Maguire?
Toby Maguire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they did that, like, I think it was the third one where they brought Venom in.
And it was terrible, even though poor Topher Grace from That 70s Show was supposed to be Venom. And Venom's the coolest villain ever, and it could, or anti-hero ever, and it could have been awesome, and instead it was just awful.
Right, so they built it all up, right? They had all these previews with, like, the Venom suit and Venom, and then Venom was, like 6 seconds or something of that entire movie, and it was, like, all about the Sandman, and nobody cared. So I'm really worried that they... I wouldn't say worried. I am concerned that they are pulling a lot of narrative threads into this. There's a lot of stuff that's being tied together, and I want to see it come together in a way that does it all justice. I'm super partial, as I know a lot of people are, to the Worm God lore and the Hive lore and the way it ties into all kinds of things. I'm going to try not to go off on a theory tangent on it, because that's a whole other discussion topic, but... I just want to see it all come together in a way that makes sense and does each piece justice, you know. But between the Warmind and Anna Bay, as she's already well known,
yeah, affectionately known as,
and then of course these hints about the worms and Nokris, possibly not by name but suggested. And then obviously going back to the Leviathan too, there's just a lot of narrative elements in there. You know, and as somebody who, I guess, kind of thinks about things in terms of, you know, the way narratives are organized, that's a lot for them to throw at us in, you know, what I'm guessing is going to be 5 or 6 story missions and a raid. And then maybe, you know, I'm assuming probably one strike. That is a lot for them to communicate. So, I have concerns.
Yeah.
I have concerns.
Yeah, we all do. We spoke about this before we started the podcast, but the basic thing that these small DLCs are small DLCs. It's usually 3 story missions, 2 strikes, if you're lucky, 1 if you're on Xbox. Although, are we getting 2 strikes on Xbox this time and 3 on PlayStation 3? Is that what it is? I feel like that's what it is. But nobody knows, because none of us here pay attention to the exclusives. We'd like to pretend that they don't exist. But regardless, you get three story missions, 4 story missions, maybe 5 story missions, and a couple strikes, and a raid layer at this point in time. And there's not really a lot to, like, you know, provide a satisfying conclusion to a character that's been built up a lot. And we were saying this earlier, but they have a really bad habit of taking what should be really awesome, big, complex characters and crushing them down into one of these minor DLCs and then being like, and there's a satisfying conclusion, and it's not. Because they've built up so much lore outside of the game about this character that we have this idea, like, this is the Worm God. And you're telling me it only took me 3 story missions to beat this thing? Like, what were we so worried about? The story missions aren't even difficult. Like, that's always what's been an issue for me in the Destiny universe, is that they build these characters up to be these massive, unbeatable things that have destroyed entire civilizations And I just like waltz right in there, like Panoptes. Like I put like three bullets into that dude, and he was dead. It was like, this is what Osiris was worried about. This was what it is. Like, this is too easy. And on top of that, because you're doing raid layers now, it's very difficult to integrate, the story mission into the raid layer because the raid layer is off on its own, doing its own thing. And I hope they try to do it. I hope, the Worm God is the boss of the raid layer, because that'd be pretty cool. But it wouldn't really make sense considering some things. So, it's almost, you almost dig yourself into a corner. Like if the only thing this DLC did was we went to Mars and we were helping Anna Bray discover, Clovis Bray's lost facility, and there was some hive there. And if they didn't hype up the fact that there may be a worm god involved in this, I don't think people would be as disappointed. But if you're gonna hype a worm god, you gotta provide some type of nice little, bow on top of that package for us. And if you don't, just like with Osiris and just like with Saint 14, people are gonna be upset.
It's a dangerous path to walk when you take something that has spawned as much lore discussion and argument and theorizing as as the Worm Gods in the Books of Sorrow to reference those directly here. To a certain extent, I kind of hope that it's just references, that they just sort of hint at, like, hey, in the future, maybe in September, who knows, you're gonna have to deal with this other threat that is rising in this expansion but is not yet here.
That
And
would be like best case scenario.
in the
Like they.
meantime, here's another smaller threat that you have to deal with to find out what the extent of the big threat that's coming in 4 months
Yeah, kind of like
is.
they're teasing it.
Or 5 months, however long it is. Yeah, that would be phenomenal.
The Taken King was fantastic. It gave us about 20 missions to really get to understand the depths of Oryx and what he had done and who he was. It gave us the Books of Sorrow, and then it gave us Regicide, which was, I actually thought was a fantastic story mission to like kind of kill Oryx. And then it gave us King's Fall, which was an epic raid to really kill Oryx. Like that was a satisfying conclusion for a character who had been hyped up.
They really did, I think, a great job not only of hyping, and we talk about the Taken King a lot, I think, and I think a lot of Destiny players do kind of refer back to it in terms of like the degree of overhaul they'd like to see in Destiny 2. And it's hard not to because they did so many things right. They did so many things that just worked well, and like for me, a lot of my community, as far as the people that I spent time playing Destiny with, had vanished before the Taken King came out, and it really brought a lot of people back, and it also connected me to a lot of new people who were coming back looking for people to play with. And that's the kind of change that we want to see. We don't expect it from this DLC. Anyone who's expecting that in Warmind is setting themselves up for disappointment. Warmind is not going to revolutionize the world of Destiny 2. It's going to do some good things, hopefully. Season 3 is going to do some great things, as far as walking in the right direction. But the best thing they can do from my perspective is tee us up for a killer September.
And on that note, let's talk about season 3. So specifically, there are a couple of big changes that are coming to season 3. The first are exotics are getting some exotics are getting pretty massive updates. Almost all the exotics are getting some change in the way they're used in an attempt to make them more special. And if you listen to the Exotic and Crucible commentary, developer commentary from earlier today, they said they want to do a lot more of moving exotics up to around that 0.8 time to kill, or providing other exotics with very unique perks. So their example was Tractor Cannon now suppresses on hits, and they showed a bunch of clips of it suppressing, which is pretty hilarious. They showed,
Those were awesome clips, by the
they were
way.
really good. I mean, clearly they were very good. The one where he suppressed the God of the Fist of Havoc and killed him was fantastic.
That
I'm
was
actually slightly worried that Tractor
classic.
Cannon's going to be like really annoying in the Crucible now. Just like horrendously annoying. But on top of that, there's also Risk Runner. Basically fires unlimited amounts of bullets as long as you're taking arc damage, which is pretty cool. Sturm is going to be able to two tap after a kill with Drang. Graviton Lance is now a two shot and has massive, massive explosion. I mean, there's a whole host of changes that are coming there. Even looks like they're even maybe changing Wardcliff Coil. Rat King's rate of fire increases. So exotics just across the board are getting some crazy, crazy buffs. I'm hopeful that for the most part their base time to kills don't change, so I don't have to go through and update the spreadsheet on that first day when I would really like to be playing. But I have a feeling some of them are going to. So I'm gonna have to figure out the special tendencies and put those on the spreadsheet. But at the same time, I have a lot of work I'd like to do with resilience when private matches come. And that's the second thing that's happening. Private matches are coming, which is pretty great. They showed us a little preview of that. And then in addition to that, we're also getting our ranks, our seasonal ranks, Glory and Valor. I believe Glory is the just play games and it goes up faster if you win, but eventually it caps out and then you can reset it. And there will be rewards for resetting your rank a certain number of times. So it's kind of like prestiging. And then there's also Valor, which is you win, you go up, you lose, you go down. And that's the more like competitive one. And that's also the one that awards the Redrix's Claymore, which is the pulse rifle a lot of people are going to be trying to get because it has Desperado, that perk which increases the rate of fire without decreasing the impact after headshot kills when you proc Outlaw. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, lots of good changes. One note, and I think I tweeted this out earlier, but between Tractor Cannon, buffing Void Damage, and Risk Runner, providing what looks to be pretty killer response in PvP now, I think I might just change all of my energy weapons to Void. And call it good so that I never accidentally feed anyone else's Risk Runner, and I'm always set for Tractor Cannon because I just can't think of a reason not to so far.
Yeah, it's going to be fun playing with all those new exotics. And they're also getting Masterworks added to them, which is pretty neat. And
Yes.
each Masterwork is handcrafted for the gun that it's on itself. And some of them are relatively minor, and some of them are totally like altering the way the gun plays. And I believe those are for the most part going to be secret. You're going to have to figure them out. Of course, once the community figures them out, everybody will know them. So it's going to be pretty cool. But they're actually determined they only start you. It drops like a little core for you. For the specific weapon, and each one of those cores comes from specific activities. So that's gonna be a nice little grind. That's gonna be a fun little thing to chase after,
Yeah.
and it's gonna just give you another thing to do for exotics.
Yeah, that should definitely be I think that'll be a chase that will probably take the average player several weeks at least. It depends on the odds, of course, for different ones if they're, totally RNG or if they're like accomplishment based. If it's, go run 20 strikes, you can knock that out pretty quick. But if it's RNG, and you just get it from strikes, then it might take a while. So, and I think they said it varies, so that'll be good.
Yep, and then we've also got new Crucible maps coming out. There's two for Xbox. I believe there's a third one for PlayStation, but again, we won't speak about that. So there's Meltdown and Solitude. Looks like I can't actually tell which one's which, but I'm gonna assume Meltdown is the one with all the ice on it, and Solitude is the one with the Clovis Bray thing. Looking forward to playing those. One thing they have been pretty good at is making Crucible maps for Destiny 2. I very much enjoy the vast majority of the Crucible maps in the game, so I'm excited to finally get my hands on those new ones. And private matches mean you're going to be able to explore all over the place and basically look and find all the nooks and crannies and all the hiding spots and everything like that. So I'm very excited. And private matches for me really means that I'm going to be finding some poor soul who doesn't mind being a test dummy and shooting them with a bunch of different weapons over and over again, trying to test the different resiliency values, and trying to figure that out. So.
Yeah, private matches are exciting. I'm really looking forward to getting to test some of these exotic effects in private matches. Kind of been thinking I might be spending a lot of lunch breaks doing that over the next month or two here. I'm also excited to just really get to spend time exploring some of these maps without getting shot because I really this happened when they brought out private matches in Destiny 1 as well. We kind of got to spend some time just getting to know the maps, and there's so much like design work and so much detail that goes into them that you never see in a Crucible match. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm also a little curious if they might slip a few scannables in there for us when private matches launch and just not tell us until somebody notices. So I'll be keeping my eyes peeled for that. I encourage you to do the same and let me know if you find any. I'd love to check them out. So.
We had a great time the very first time private matches launched in Destiny 1. I just took some time and I just loaded into every single map and I just walked the entire map with nobody trying to kill me, nobody shooting at me. I just walked the entire map and I looked at every single map, really seeing it for the first time because it's a totally different thing when you can stop and enjoy all the little tiny details, like you said, they put in the map. It's truly fantastic.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to do that, just because, like I said, you get to appreciate it a whole nother way. And not to mention, sometimes it helps you see the map in a little bit different way. Sometimes it helps clear things up when you're not, in the heat of the moment, always trying to run from point A to point B without getting killed. So I love private matches. I wish private matches had been in here at launch. But another good thing that private matches are going to do is they're going to bring about some Destiny 2 tournaments. And that's another thing I'm looking forward to seeing again.
One thing I have to, at this point, it's just a complete 100% tease, but I just have to mention that there are some rumblings that a podcast Crucible Showdown may be taking place. This would be a shootout between all of the Destiny podcasts that agree to participate. I think from what I've seen on Twitter and in Discord chats. I think there's something like 10 to 20 podcasts that have expressed an interest. So we'll see how many people are able to commit. But that probably more on that coming after private matches drop, looking toward the mid to late May when that might happen. So keep your eyes peeled, and hopefully we'll be able to test our mettle in the Crucible here against some other podcast hosts.
And talking about other podcasts, this actually has nothing to do with that. I don't know why I said it like it was going to be a good transition. I could figure out a way to transition to it, but I actually want to talk about the Destiny 2 narrative preview that they came out with today, because this is where I think the majority of the really great information on
It's
Warmind
the best
came out. To.
transition.
I was going to mention something about Lorecast, but I couldn't really find a way to tie it all together.
Speaking of
So I
other
just
podcasts, let's talk
yeah,
about lore.
let's talk about something totally different. But so Chris Barrett came out and said he wanted to give us some previews of some of the lore that's upcoming. So there's another Destiny comic called Warmind coming out. And look, if you haven't read the Fall of Osiris comic, it's only 20 pages. I would go ahead and suggest you read it. There are only two things I really, really didn't like about it. Obviously, the later haters line was extremely jarring and did not, it just, you want to say that it kind of fits Sigura's personality, but even with Sigura's personality, it just doesn't really fit in the context of what's going on. So that was a pretty bad line. But then also, that comic, you can see their thought process for completely and brutally changing Brother Vance from this dark, mysterious figure to like a rambling fanboy. And I really found that entire shift from the people who were worshiping Osiris from being like, these dark, mysterious figures to being just people who loved like a celebrity, like they're like tabloid readers, and you can see that in the comic, and I found it disrespectful to the lore. But at the same time, it does give you a good bit of backstory on Osiris and why he was exiled and everything like that. So I would recommend reading it. But the good news, and what I want to say, is that Warmind, based on what Christopher Barrett has said, seems much darker and more serious in tone, is what I'm trying to say. If you read Fall of Osiris and you didn't like it, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that Warmind is not like that. Just another 10 to 20 pages of some good, actual, good, solid writing, backstory, something like that, because I would love to see that. Because the Fall of Osiris comic, as much as I didn't like the writing, the story it told was useful and beneficial for my understanding of the Destiny 2 universe.
Yeah.
And I appreciated it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we get the occasional poke for this, but I basically have to agree with pretty much everything you said. You really get like if you played through the Fall of Osiris campaign and you're like, man, this is just like a this is not the way that I thought that things were, and this is feels like a weird take in some ways on Osiris, from what we previously knew. Reading that comic explains why it is that way. And I mean, it is what it is at this point. It's in the game. It's canon, and that's life. I see where they were trying to go with it, and I see how they got there from the lore and kind of why the speaker didn't like Osiris. I think it would have been better if they had taken it a darker and more serious route. If Osiris, the problem I had with the comics is that I expected Osiris to be a controversial figure. I expected him to, be a little bit crazy, and they really kind of portrayed him, I think, as being totally reasonable and 100% correct, and everyone else was wrong. And I was just like, this is not as exciting as I thought it was going to be. He's not really asking any surprising questions. Everyone else is just being a dick. Which, it coming off of the Destiny 2 launch, where we really saw a different side of the speaker, and the speaker kind of came out and like was it's kind of it was as badass as a non-combatant can get. The speaker's portrayal in the Fall of Osiris comics, without spoiling too much, was not favorable, and was for me that was the most jarring thing about them. Is that we saw this other side of the speaker in these cutscenes in this storyline, and I was expecting to see this kind of clash of personalities between this speaker who feels really strongly about things, and then Osiris who maybe feels strongly but disagrees about the right way to do things. And instead, we kind of saw like I mean, yeah, again, just to reiterate myself, we just saw the speaker basically being wrong and Osiris being right and Osiris getting pushed out for no reason.
Characters became caricatures of themselves,
Yeah.
and it just felt like it was simplified down to the lowest common denominator, and it was almost like a parody of, it was almost like you told someone to write a really simple story to tell this story.
Yeah.
Like, you were like, here's the basic story, and you summarized it, and you were like, write a really simple, story to come up with this. Like, there was no character development, there was no anything. It was just like you said, it was very black and white.
Yeah.
Like, everybody was one extreme or the other.
Which for me, like the Destiny universe has always been there's always been some of that, but it's also there's been a lot of like there's been a lot of questioning. There's been a lot of are we really the heroes in this story? We come back from the dead over and over again to murder aliens. Like Destiny 1 was rife with these kind of like with the darkness basically saying, why do you say that I'm evil and you're good? What justification do you have for that? And
It was all about those shades of gray, man, and not the 50,
no.
not the 50 shades of gray, but the other ones, the ones in between those shades of
Yeah,
gray,
there were like
with less sadomasochism or whatever it is,
there were like
and
five
more
shades of
killing
gray.
aliens. Yeah.
But yeah, so it was a weird experience. But I know from your conversation at the summit and from what you've been able to talk about of that, it sounds like they are aware of that and have already taken steps to change that direction. So that's exciting. I'm excited for the Warmind comic.
And speaking of the lore itself, this one actually does kind of have a tie-in, and
Yeah.
the Warmind comic. They gave us some excerpts from various writings. So the first one is Tyra, and it's Tyra Karn speaking to her ghost. And we're not going to read the whole thing for you. If you want to read it yourself, just go to Bungie.net and you'll be able to find it there. But basically, it's them talking about the Braetech Futurescape and the Hellespacian. And I guess originally the Hellespacian was just a place for tourism, and the Braetech Futurescape was supposed to be like for promotional purposes. It says they had an AI led tour, and all indications indicate that if any research was done there, it was mostly for show, just like low-level projects, like creating improved cold weather gear and the like. Which is funny because if you look at the hunter gear from the Destiny Summit, all of it is cold weather gear created by Clovis Bray. So I thought that was kind of a funny little tie-in. But it says if the records are correct, the facility actually operated on a far larger scale. It could have been even the site for Rasputin's core development, where the Warmind was born. And then the ghost counters back and says, "You think you got all that from some fragmented files? How do you know you're not wrong? We spent a decade searching for Charlemagne's vault." Another little throwback to Destiny 1 and some things that were soon to come. And then says, "I was correct about Charlemagne existing, just not about what it was. If we hadn't done that research, we wouldn't know anything about submines." So I know for a long time people have thought that Charlemagne was a second Warmind, but it looks like Tyra is saying that it's in fact just a submind of Rasputin.
To which I just have to say to all of the people who have insisted for years that there's a second Warmind, that Charlemagne's out there, I was right. Suck it.
So, but on the same thing, it says Rahul still disagrees with that assessment. And she responds with Rahul needs to get his head out of his engrams. So,
And I just have to say again, so if you think that Charlemagne is a Warmind, you're on the side of Rahul. That is like
that's true.
that is like
That's not a side you want to be
that's
on.
a hard insult right there. Them's fighting words.
And then they even kind of throw this little bit. It's not shade, but it's sometimes our conclusions change. And with each shift, we learn more of where we came from. The next shift in our perceptions, it may be on Mars. And that's them saying basically like, hey, we wrote some of this stuff. Sometimes things change, is basically what they're saying. That's at least the way I took it.
Yeah, and that's a fair, probably a fair interpretation. Any time there's kind of any of this lore, there's always a little bit of somebody at Bungie who knows what's going on, speaking, I think, behind that writing. And I think that's not unfair to say, it's not necessarily that they're retconning anything here, but they've always written the lore of Destiny from in the world, which means it has always been from a questionable narrator. None of it has been, or very little of it has been, something that you can take as a hard and fast fact. It's always been, this is what someone thinks happened in the past in the world of Destiny. And maybe it's true, and maybe it's half true, and maybe it's just a complete falsehood, and you'll find out the real truth later. And here we're finding out the real truth later. So that was a really great read. I love that one.
I loved all of them. The next one is actually maybe my favorite, but it's actually about the worms. It says, and I actually kind of want to read this one because I think this is a really, really good one. But it says, in the beginning there were five: Yul, the honest worm; Akka, the worm of secrets; Eir, the keeper of order; Yur, the ever hunger; and Zol, the will of the thousands. And they were virtuous. In time, Yul spoke the truth and bargained well. Its children escaped the fundament and spread throughout the worlds. They followed the words of the deep and brought low many agents of the sky, and skies capitalized. They took, and a portion of all they took was returned to the virtuous. And so we obviously know that's the story told to us in the Book of Sorrows. Yol is the worm that, helped Orash and Savathun and God, what's the other one's name?
I'm totally drawing a blank
The
now, too.
little fighter. It's like,
Zivu or Wrath.
yeah, there you go. And it helped all of them basically become what they were, from being basically krill beings that were fed on by everything on the fundament to powerful warriors which destroyed agents of the sky. Which, again, if you haven't read the Books of Sorrow, please go read the Books of Sorrow. They're absolutely fantastic. It says they grew strong. In time, Oryx learned Akka's secret, that he was stronger than the gods, that they had given their power, and in giving it was diminished. Oryx rose up and slew Akka. He took, and he grew strong with Akka's power. And Akka's body is what they say they made the dreadnought out of. Now, whether or not that is actually what the Dreadnought is constructed out of, because the Dreadnought is apparently very, very large. If you look at the size of the hole it made in the rings of Saturn, and it's sitting in the middle of it, it's actually very, very large. So I'm not sure if the worms are that big. But at the same time, they do say that he, carved Akka's body to make the Dreadnought, so metaphorical or not.
Yeah, they actually, I think the, I'd have to go look it up, so somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they said he used a piece of Akka's body to make the dreadnought. So the virtuous worms, the worm gods, are what I would probably categorize as fucking humongous.
Leviathans, you could say.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Well, the way I look at it is maybe he just cut off a little tiny bit and stuck it on the front bumper and called it and said he used a piece of his body. But so
Possible.
it says, and the five became four, and Yol spoke, "Behold my majesty, behold my crushing might, my staggering size, my scales that shine with an impressive gleam. Behold my wings, which create winds that sweep through the stars. Together we have called life to fundament and made that life thrive, protected it from extinction. They are our host and we are their strength. But we do not give, we take, for this is the struggle to exist. We are not immune. The weakest of us must give way to the stronger." And Zol felt fear, cunning, for it knew that Yule would in time turn its teeth to Zol. But Akka was not the only one with a secret. Zol had a pact with a forgotten child, abandoned by its father. The cursed one took a fraction of Zol's power, and in return, Zol took the heart from the child, whose name had been struck from the world's grave. The orphan called life out of death and fed that power to Zol. And now this is what everybody seems to think is Nokkris.
Yeah.
Because Nokkris has been alluded to in Taken King, Nokkris was alluded to.
Yep.
And the world's grave is obviously the Shrine of Oryx, which was very, very early on in Vanilla Destiny, and it was supposed to be like their library of all of their knowledge.
Yeah, and then in the Taken King, there's a single statue that we scan. And the name given for the figure it depicts is Nokkris, but the ghost says, "I can't find any reference."
Maybe another one of Oryx's children, maybe a sibling of Oryx, maybe something totally different, maybe a step sibling of Oryx that he never really liked anyways until he lost him. But it's together they would find a new world to rule, and the five became three. So Akka was murdered by Oryx, Zol left with who we're going to assume is Nokkris, and now we have Yule, Ir, and Yur. So that's the honest worm, the keeper of order, and the ever hunger, while the worm of secrets is dead and the will of thousands is off with Nokkris. And it says, "I, the child, become herald death. Record these words. They are not of the sorrow, they are mine." And sorrow is capitalized, which we can assume means the books of sorrow. So it may be Nokkris that is saying that. And like you were saying, I really, really hope this is some sick foreshadowing for Comet come September.
Yeah.
Because I would love nothing more than another fantastic, fantastic hive-based, 20 mission long, brutal, brutal raid. I would love nothing more than that come September.
Yeah, that would be phenomenal. Like, I don't think they could give us anything better than that. There's, as much as I think sometimes people are a little annoyed, the Hive kind of get a lot of attention in this game, but the fact is that Oryx's family drama is pretty engaging. And the Hive also, I think, as an enemy, just do a really good job of evoking that truly alien feeling and that truly kind of evil feeling that I think is just makes them satisfying to fight. To a certain extent, the Cabal are kind of like, I think they're more like, to me, they're more like rivals than enemies. And the Vex are just sort of like, they don't really like hate us. Sometimes we even work together. They're just carrying out their programming, so they're not really enemies either. And the Fallen are just, they're in bad shape. I feel bad for them more than anything. So the Hive are the only ones that I can really be like, yeah, I hate these guys. And so I'm okay with lots of Hive story.
And the next one is from the Cryptarch, and it's basically a Cryptarch just talking about what caused the freezing over of the Hellas Basin. It says, it's of interest that the effects of the ecological changes in the collapse and post-collapse eras. It says that records show that just after the traveler's departure, the reason had a massive climate shift. And that happened in only a couple of days. And they say it doesn't seem like the traveler caused it because the traveler had already lost it. And so they say that there must be external factors. They found a crashed war site, which indicates that the climate change on Mars happened over only a couple of days. And they're asking, how did it happen? Well, the war site also says there was an invasion of unknown biological entities, including one of massive size. They were detected in the region immediately before the event. And then they question, could this have been a collapse era attack with a weapon of unknown origin? So it begs the question, did the hive cause the freezing over? Which they don't think so, because it says Reinhardt goes on for a few hundred pages more from here. I'll send the whole thing to Jinji, which is Anna Bray's ghost, if you're interested. But his conclusions are all wrong. So the cryptarch, the original cryptarch, Reinhardt, believed that the massive biological organisms caused the freezing over with a weapon of their own making. Cameron, who's another cryptarch, sending stuff to Anna and Jinju, her ghost, which is also interesting because it's another named ghost, mentions that that's the wrong conclusion. So my method of thinking is that Rasputin somehow caused the freezing over.
Sure. Yeah, that would make a lot of sense given the...
Because if the Traveler didn't do it, yeah, and if the Hive didn't do it...
They did name the DLC Warmind, so Occam's Razor suggests...
And then there's also a Zavala one, which is really, really fantastic. Zavala basically just says that the ice on Mars is melting. Ikor believes it's the Traveler's light that is melting, but he says he doesn't know what it is. He says that he's starting to maybe not question the Traveler, but he's saying, I remember it's silence, and even now it doesn't speak, or if it does, there's no one here to hear and understand its words, because the speaker's dead, obviously. But he knows what's on Mars. He basically was looking at a bunch of records that Saladin had sealed up relating to SIVA. And he says he put a lock on certain data concerning what lies hidden on Mars. He says we were stumbling around blindly, talking about us, the Guardians, in those days, in the wrong place and at the wrong time, calling out to someone that could not respond or understand us. And I believe this is him talking about us trying to reach out to Rasputin.
Yeah.
And Saladin let it happen because our failures were safer than the alternative, meaning that us failing to reach Rasputin by doing it in the wrong place and trying to reach him the wrong way was safer than us possibly actually reaching Rasputin. And what he's saying now is that he's looking at Rasputin like it is so far above and beyond what we're trying to do that we can't even understand its machinations. Similar to how we don't understand what the Traveler is trying to do, Rasputin is on the same level. And we don't understand what Rasputin is trying to do. And it looks at us coldly calculating. And we don't know if it's going to save us or kill us or be an ally or an enemy. And it's a really, really fantastic read. You should absolutely, absolutely read it. Because this, you know what I like about this? It's that favorite color we were talking about, shades of gray.
Yeah.
Where you don't know if Rasputin is good. You don't know if Rasputin is evil. You don't know if he's some combination of both. Zavala doesn't know. You don't know. We don't know. It's none of this... You know, smashing someone to one extreme or the other.
Yeah, it's really great for that reason, because it raises more questions than it answers, while still answering some questions. I also love some of the other kind of tips that they do. You know, they do a bunch of callbacks to Destiny 1 lore, which is phenomenal. I love seeing things connect. They also mention a couple of things. You know, as far as Ikora and Cade, right at the end, they mention that Cade is wasting his time filling the prison of elders, which is something that we've not seen in Destiny 2. So that's exciting. You know, Ikora is too intrigued by the knowledge. So we see there's some conflict among the Vanguard, which we've known in the past to be a thing. We saw them unified at the beginning of Destiny 2. But now we see them maybe splintering a little bit, kind of following their own passions and their own agendas. And so that means, you know, hopefully some more exciting storytelling to follow from this card. Yeah.
There's actually the flavor text of a sidearm called Peace by Consensus, which you get from pledging to each of the factions once. You get this little side arm called Peace by Consensus, and it actually has a lore tab on it that talks about them trying to have a consensus now that the speaker's dead. And there's a little bit of discord amongst the members because there's nobody to basically lead them, which is pretty interesting. But I want to read just this one paragraph out here. It's something Zavala says, and I absolutely love it because I love this description of Rasputin. It's, "I know what is on Mars. What is buried beneath that ice is too dangerous to allow back into our world. It doesn't think like we do. It weighs and judges our existence in ruthless calculations, and we don't even know what the goal is. Once, long ago, it might have been created as a tool to save humanity. It is far more than a mere machine now, and it is broken." That, I think, is one of the best descriptions we've had of a character. That paragraph right there has done more to hype me up for this upcoming DLC than like anything else. The fact that Rasputin, we thought it was this. We thought it was the key to saving ourselves. We thought it maybe would help the traveler. We thought all these things, and now he's saying, "I know what it is, and I know it's not working." He says, "Saladin sealed all the records relating to SIVA. He put a lock on certain data concerning what lies hidden in Mars." A says, "But the locks are open now. I've studied the monsters in our past to prepare for the battles in our future, and I know how to reach this particular monster before anyone else does." I just love that. I love that whole section right there.
Yeah, I mean it's phenomenal. Like that section about Rasputin, like the first time I read it, like I got a little chill. I was just like, shit, like this is the Rasputin story that I want. I want to be like, what is even going on? Is this thing gonna just kill us all?
Well, it's dark, it's not simplified, it's mythical, you know, there's mystery to it. This is everything that we wanted in the story,
Yeah.
and we didn't end up getting with Curse of Osiris. And then there's another one, there's a Rasputin card itself, which is, you know, written in Rasputin speak, where it's, you know, all forward slashes and causals and hard civilization kill stuff like that. But the basic thing is that he says the ice is melting. The Polaris temperature is rising. It's higher than melting point, and he's assessing available Voluspa and Charlemagne resources. And he's assuming control of atmospheric defenses and invoking Aurora Palisade. And I love every time we get a Rasputin like Grimoire card or flavor text. I absolutely love it because I love reading what apparently is the way Rasputin thinks.
Yeah.
But it's basically just like, oh shit, everything's melting. There's a lot of chitin, non-native organic
I
chitin,
love
and
that.
evidence of vermiform parasites. It's like, oh shit, there's Hive under here. They're all melting. They're going to be free soon. We got to do something about this. Aurora Palisade, possibility of hard civilization kill event is non-zero.
Yeah. Just
Cracks it up.
the phrasing, like props to everyone who spent time like working on writing those Rasputin cards, because those are just so much fun to read. Especially, you know, there are some bits in there that are that you're always like, I need to go look that up. Like, what is that even? And that just like that's fun, I guess. You know, for me at least, it's fun.
So someone brought up, hold on, let me find this last. So the Voluspa poem is a Nordic poem, I believe. And the last line of the Nordic poem references the sudden appearance of Nidhogg, Nidhogg, the dragon, bearing corpses in its wings. And someone brought that up earlier today on Reddit. And I just wanted to point that out, that that's what Voluspa is. And a dragon bearing corpses on its wings sounds very, very similar to the way the worms were describing themselves with their scales and their wings. And, you know, I don't think we're dealing with a bunch of giant earthworms here.
Yeah.
I think we might be dealing with the old school worms, WYRMS.
As much as people want to argue that the worms aren't dragons, I don't know, man. They sound awful dragon-like to me. So I'm feeling that as an interpretation. That makes sense. And that's exactly the kind of like callback that Bungie has been making to Earth lore, like to real world lore, throughout Destiny. there are so many instances of like you go and you look something up and you're like, yeah, okay, that's pretty good. It's pretty good analog for what we're seeing here.
I love this stuff. It's amazing what they can do with just five Grimoire cards worth of release a week before release, and how much they can get people to think about, and how exciting it is. And then they're putting out a comic tomorrow. And I'm not gonna lie, I'm actually excited to read the comic. I want to. I care about this lore now.
Yeah.
And like, I want to read it. So I'm going to. It comes out tomorrow, which is Wednesday, May 2nd, and I'm excited for it. But that's pretty much all the info we have right now. I think more stuff is going to be dropping throughout the entire rest of the week. I think they're going to be talking some more about Escalation Protocol. I don't know what else they're going to be doing, but I'm excited and looking forward to seeing it all.
Yeah, it's an exciting week. It's an exciting time, kind of seeing some things for Destiny moving the needle back in the right direction across the board with lore, with the gameplay tuning. There's just a lot of good stuff happening for Destiny 2 right now, which is making me really happy. So I guess we'll just keep it tuned to BNet and keep it tuned here for more massive breakdowns. I think that's all I've got.
Yep, and we will be back next week. We're probably going to record Wednesday night if I had to guess, because obviously Warmind comes out Tuesday. So we want to spend all of Tuesday playing it. We want to be able to give you guys our thoughts. And yeah, so we'll talk to you probably next Wednesday or Thursday. But until then, thanks for tuning in.
All right. Peace.